Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's up? What's going on? What's good, everybody? That's right. It is the November 27, 2022 edition of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, the leader of the Boxing Source. On social media, you can catch us through Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Of course, got the YouTube channel. And we do have the website, theboxingsource.net. So make sure you visit theboxingsource.net. That's right. You know, we have, what's going down, you know, through the, what I would say, all the action that took place, you know what I mean? You know, yesterday, we're going to be going through all of that as you have heavyweight action that took place, right? And you also have the super middleweight, or not super middleweight, but super lightweight title fight that took place, right? So we're going to be going through all of that here in this particular episode. And so we want to get to this stuff here as we can. You know, shout out to, you know, those that will be listening live here. That is available on YouTube Live, but it's also going to be available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts, the Boxing Source Radio Show will be available for you there. So, like I said, we got a number of things here that we're going to be talking about in this particular episode. As you had Dylan White that took on Jermaine Franklin over in the UK, and also in Carson, California, or not? You had Jose Zepeda taking on Regis Prograis for that vacant WBC super lightweight title. So we want to be breaking both of those fights down here in this particular episode. And going to be starting off with the heavyweight bout that took place between Dylan White and Jermaine Franklin. Of course, you had Dylan White, who was the former, quote unquote, long time WBC mandatory challenger up until earlier this year, as he took on and fell short against Tyson Luke Fury for that WBC title. And so trying to, you know, see who else he could get in the ring with. And he was able to step into the ring to face Jermaine Franklin. Jermaine Franklin came in there with a record of 21 wins and no losses. And Dylan White came in there with a record of 29 wins and 3 losses. They were talking about Jermaine Franklin as being someone who, you know, while being undefeated, hadn't really been that active recently. He did have a fight back in May of this year against Rodney Moore. Rodney Moore was there with a record of 20 wins, 21 losses and two draws. And that particular bout was, I think, in Gary, Indiana, as I'm checking the rack. And it was an 8-round bout. So he had Jermaine Franklin that had been in a number of 10-round bouts up until 2019, had an extended layoff until that fight against Rodney Moore this in May, pretty much, you know, a few months back. And that was an 8-rounder before he got into this bout here against Dillon White. Like I said, Dillon White, he came in there with a record of 28 wins and 3 losses. There, of course, coming off that loss to Tyson Fury, 6-round TKO loss to Tyson Fury. So a lot of people were trying to figure out, you know, what's going down as far as, you know, where Jermaine Franklin was at this particular point. They hadn't seen much of him, you know. So this was kind of like the first time they really seen something there with Jermaine Franklin. Now, he came in there at weighing in at around 257 pounds. Now, in his last bout, he was up to 277 pounds. So he had went down to 257. Now, before all of that, this is a guy that had been fighting around the low 230s, you know, but had gotten up to around 245 back in 2019 against Rydell Booker. And also, you know, he had a bout against Jerry Forrest in 2019 where, you know, he had a close victory over Jerry Forrest in 2019, you know, where he was at around 240 pounds. So going from around the 230s, 240s in 2019, and then that extended layoff where he ballooned up to around 277 pounds in this fight against Rodney Moore before facing Dillon White, where he was there at 257. Now, I know that I see what's going down here in the live chat through YouTube. Adari Pennant, he says that he should drop down to about 240s or 230s to be more agile and, you know, more mobile. Yeah. You know, as I said, he was around there around the 220s, you know, earlier in his career, you know, but they got into 230, went up to like 240s in 2019 until his last bout, but then ballooned up. So, you know, around that time, around that layoff, you know, when it was lockdown and whatnot, like he pretty much went up there, because if you're getting in to your bout against Rodney Moore at 277 pounds, man, I'm thinking that he might have been around 300. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to L Dub Boxing. One time for L Dub Boxing. It's a bull in there in the building. So what's happening now with you? And Cozy is also here on the live chat here saying that Dillon White is cooked with his, you know, his Adrian Broner, you know, impression there. He gonna get cooked. But yeah, let's get into this bout here, Dillon White and Jermaine Franklin. You know that I did talk with, you know, Dimitri Salida weeks back. You know, he was talking about Jermaine Franklin. And of course, y'all seen there in that, I guess, the press conference joint or whatnot, where Dimitri Salida got into a little bit with Dillon White. But still, you know, going into this bout, you know, like I said, I ain't really know much about Jermaine Franklin, that much about Jermaine Franklin going into this bout, other than having that one bout earlier this year. And Dillon White, you know, had, you know, his first thing here with under the tutelage or the training of Billy McGirt. So I wanted to see what Dillon White was going to do coming off his loss to Tyson Fury and to see how Jermaine Franklin performed here in this type of atmosphere against someone who has been a world title contender. And early in the bout, you've seen that Jermaine Franklin, man, I mean, he was moving. He was moving them hands, man. He got them hands out there, and he was able to, you know, throw punches in bunches at times. And he was very fluent with this with his hands. I thought that was very good starting off this bout against Dillian White. While at the same time, Dillian White, to me, from an offensive perspective, was Dillian White in that. I'll say this. Dillian White fights like he wants to be comfortable. Let me run that again. Dillian White fights like he wants to be comfortable in that he wants to throw his shots. He wants to go to the body. He wants to go upstairs a couple of times. He wants to mix in a couple of things, but he doesn't do stuff that could be either out of the ordinary or he doesn't do moves to like press the action. Adari in the live chat got a good suggestion, and I'll get to that there a little bit later. Shout out to those coming in here live on the chat. But yeah, back to Dillian White. He does things where he fights like he wants to be comfortable. He fights like he wants his opponent to just stand right there, to be right in front of him, to pretty much take his shots and not expect much resistance back. And when he does have resistance back, then he kind of covers up, you know, goes into now his shell of sorts, you know. And as posted here right on the live chat, shout out to Cozy Rito. Yep. Dillian White fought the fight trying to defend the uppercut. And what he was doing was he was going into a shell of sorts where his right hand or right arm was pretty much right under his chin. So you could get some jabs in, you could get a couple hooks in if it was like a left hook, but it's not like a right hook. You couldn't really get a right hook in because his glove is going to be on the right side of his or the left side of his face. And you couldn't get the uppercuts in because the forearm was right there, right under his chin. So you had to mix things up a bit in order for you to get shots or score points against Dillian White with that type of guard. But that didn't really stop Jermaine Franklin from getting in what he could get in, a couple jabs in, a few hooks, throwing shots. He was busy with his hands, and that was a very key thing there for him to be busy with his hands, but also he was a very rugged and durable fighter because Dillian White was still trying to do what he usually does on offense, and Jermaine Franklin would not back down. So you had a couple of moments where Jermaine Franklin did kind of like get the upper hand of Dillian White, but nothing to kind of like swing the bout seriously towards his favor. So you did have him win a few rounds, but you also had Dillian White winning a few rounds in that. And so that's why, you know, while watching it live, it was just a close bout there. And yeah, you know, it was still Franklin that, you know, had that offensive efficiency. And like saying in the live chat, man, shout out to those in live chat right now. Shout out to Hardcore Boxing News over in the DMV area. Yeah, you know, Jermaine Franklin looked very sharp in there, you know. And if it wasn't for that type of defense that Dillian White had implemented, you know, while being under Buddy McGirt, hey, who knows? He probably would have got some more licks in on Dillian White, right? So you had some times when Dillian White got some good shots in on Jermaine Franklin, but every time it seemed like Dillian White got something, Jermaine Franklin came right back at him. So you couldn't really have, you know, Dillian White, you know, when he tried to press the action that he could get the better of Jermaine Franklin to where he could almost be in a dominant position of sorts, right? So what ended up happening was, hey, check it. Jermaine Franklin, he would be back. He would have his back to the ropes or something like that, and Dillian White could have some type of offense. But Jermaine Franklin would just say, hey, I'm still right here. I'm still going to, you know, get right back at you and throw these combinations or throw a big shot to where, hey, you ain't getting a whole a complete advantage towards me. you know? And so that's what kept the fight to being as close as it was, you know what I mean? And so, you know, with that being said, you kind of like had it to the point of what I would say, hey, Dillian Whyte, you know, like I said, I mean, he was the bigger fighter, taller fighter, but he didn't really kind of like use that type of thing. And you've seen, if you're watching live, that Betty McGirt was trying to mix things up in between rounds. He's kind of like saying, you know, throw the jab, but, you know, keep that shell. Throw the jab, but keep the shell. And I'm like, well, if you're trying to get the upper hand here, you have to stay consistent with what you want to do on offense. And if you're going to throw that jab, and I'm not like saying that Dillian Whyte is a fighter that has a very good jab, but you got to, you know, do that in order to start your offense to open more things up. But Jermaine Franklin was just not there to stand right in front of him and take those shots. And with Jermaine Franklin being a very game fighter over the course of that entire bout, that's what made the fight very close. Now, you go through that 12th round, you know, you had Dillian Whyte that had a couple of big shots in, and near the end of that round, that 12th round, it looked like he caught him with the left hook, but it was really more of a clubbing shot where he ended up landing with his, you know, forearm instead of the glove. And so that's what had Jermaine Franklin, you know, falling back towards the ropes. But it still wasn't enough to really hurt Jermaine Franklin there. And it went through those full 12 rounds. And once those 12 rounds were done, even though I felt like it was a very close fight, I said, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if you would have had, or if you have one or two scores of 8-4 in favor of Dillian Whyte before those scorecards were read. And then when those scorecards read, right, you had a score of 115-115, you know, a draw where, you know, you had 6-6 or something like that, but you also had, you know, maybe a 10-10 round, so to speak. So is that, or what I would say, man, I don't know how that thing would have scored, right? But then you had two scores of 116-112 in favor of Dillian Whyte, for him to have the 29th win of his professional career. And that ended up being the first loss for Jermaine Franklin. And of course, Jermaine Franklin, you know, he said, hey man, I got robbed, bro. Almost like he was, you know, from our way or something. He's from Saginaw, Michigan, you know, not that far off of Detroit, man. He just said, bro, I got robbed, man. You know, I did my thing, man. I was able to do what I needed to do, you know, and I didn't get the favor of the judges, you know, so he felt like he got robbed. Dillian Whyte kind of like brought up that, you know, it was his first fight under the tutelage of Betty McGirt, so that's why you kind of seen him with that new defensive stance that he had for the majority of that fight. And, you know, for me, I felt like that kind of was the key for the first half of the fight. I think that a lot of the punches that Jermaine Franklin was throwing was getting, you know, blocked by Dillian Whyte, you know, so there's that. Now, you know, with Jermaine Franklin, looks like, you know, he's going to be of interest of sorts. And I kind of like said that, you know, Dmitry Salida is going to get a number of phone calls, you know, here after this weekend, because this might be a number of fighters that might want to see or have a Jermaine Franklin there in the ring. And it seems like, you know, a few of the fans here in the live chat, you know, want to see more of, you know, Jermaine Franklin here. Shout out to Hardcore Boxing News. He said that, you know, Franklin had done, you know, 30 rounds of sparring with Tyson Fury and, you know, also with Daniel Dubois in the UK. You know, speaking of those two fighters, they will be in action on December 3rd with, you know, two separate fights that we'll get into here later in this podcast there. But we'll see, you know, how that goes. Cozy says that Jermaine Franklin should be put in the ring with the real big baby Jared Anderson next. Well, Jared Anderson, of course, has his upcoming bout on December 10th in Madison Square Garden against Jerry Forrest. So, you know, maybe we could see Jermaine Franklin in there against Jared Anderson. Jared Anderson gets by Jerry Forrest, but Jerry Forrest is going to be a very tough guy. We'll have to see what happens in that bout over in Madison Square Garden, you know. But, you know, Jermaine Franklin, man, I mean, he looks like a very, very solid fighter. And there could be a number of good matchups out there for him. Now, there might be, I think there's another guy that I have suggested for Jermaine Franklin, but I'm not sure if that would happen because I think that this fighter, you know, has been under some of the promotions, but also, you know, was working with Luna Bella, right? And that's the gentleman, George Arias. George Arias is, you know, undefeated. There at the heavyweight division, is a guy that, you know, throws a lot of punches, kind of like has that short, stocky style, almost fights like a Joe Frazier or moving around like a Mike Tyson type of thing. But we'll, you know, we'll see how that goes. But we'll see what happens here with Jermaine Franklin. Franklin versus Babich, we'll see how that goes there, you know, with that as well. You know what I'm saying? So we're going to see, you know, how Jermaine Franklin goes with that. And then after that, we'll see how his career goes. But I'll talk with Demetrius Salida to see, like, what he thought about what happened with this fight between Jermaine Franklin and Dillon White. And then I'll see what the direction is for Jermaine Franklin from this point forward. Now, for Dillon White, you know, we've seen that Anthony Joshua was there in attendance and that he, you know, kind of was, what I would say, looking at what was going down in the fight, and he says, I mean, maybe, you know, he has a fight with Dillon White next. I'm not really y'all too certain about that. You know, I'm not really all too certain about that. I think that Anthony Joshua might just have a fight in the interim in March. And I've kind of like suggested that he could, you know, fight for the, if it is vacant, IBF title. You know, Filip Hrgović is the IBF mandatory challenger and looks like he wants to, you know, exercise that mandatory spot. But Oleksandr Usyk looks like he's on a beeline to face Tyson Fury next year. Given what happens with Tyson Fury against Derek Chisora next weekend. You ain't really going to see Undisputed, but you will see Tyson Fury versus Oleksandr Usyk next year. Fury, you know, goes ahead and gets, you know, the win over Derek Chisora. But outside of that, you did have Eddie Hearn of Matchroom Boxing talking about, you know, maybe Anthony Joshua could fight Dillon White, but he really wants to have Anthony Joshua in another fight or some other type of fight, you know, in March. And he doesn't want to have, you know, Dillon White going off of this particular fight in November and then give him right back in it to fight in March. And then you potentially have Joshua versus White in a rematch over in the summer, right? So we could potentially have that, right? Now, the thing is, yeah, I've heard about Shelley Finkel saying that, you know, they see if they want to have Joshua next. This is something that Shelley Finkel has said, you know, while I was, you know, next to Shelley Finkel after Wilder's bout against Robert Helenius. So, you know, that part remains to be seen. I still doubt that. I feel like, you know, Deontay Wilder and Andy Ruiz Jr. will be facing each other in either March or, you know, by April. And that would leave Anthony Joshua to have a fight against an opponent. Somewhat, man, it should be Zalei Zhang, man. It should be Zalei Zhang in March, but we'll see, you know. Adari Pennant, you know, on the live chat says that Sugar Hill Stewart would be a good boxing trainer for Filip Hrgović. Man, listen, after his fight with Zalei Zhang, man, he going to need Sugar Hill Stewart or somebody, man, because, man, yo, I'm sorry, yo, like, yo, he should have beat up Zalei Zhang, and Zalei Zhang almost looked like he won that fight against Filip Hrgović, man. You know, if he wasn't, you know, 39 or somewhere at that, and or whatever, then you could, you know, maybe. Joshua versus Franklin? Hey, I don't know, man. If Eddie Hearn says that he's pretty impressed with Jermaine Franklin's performance against Dillon White, then maybe that could be the case. So you could have Anthony Joshua versus Jermaine Franklin if Eddie Hearn, you know, calls up, you know, Demetrius Salida and says, hey, mate, that was a good fight by your man, mate. Can we get him in the ring against Anthony Joshua? We'll see if Demetrius Salida would go for that. But Salida has kind of like mentioned on multiple occasions that he wants Otto Walling in the ring there against Anthony Joshua too. So that would be something there was that. So that's kind of like the situation there with Dillon White. And, you know, Dillon White and Jermaine Franklin, with Dillon White getting that win, you know what I mean? And, you know, that kind of says like, hey, Dillon White's still out there, still, you know, pretty much in the mix of sorts. But like, you know, some people were saying, man, they really aren't too much in favor of Dillon White being a guy that should be in the mix in the heavyweight division, or at least in the top of the heavyweight division. I know that some people have kind of like said, like, hey, maybe you could get Dillon White in the ring against Deontay Wilder. I would want to see that, because I would say that Deontay Wilder would easily beat Dillon White. He could have that new defensive style. He could be there training under Buddy McGirt. He could still lose to Deontay Wilder. So I know a number of fans would rather see Dillon White and Deontay Wilder than having Wilder going ahead and facing Andy Ruiz Jr. So, I mean, there's that. You know what I mean? So that kind of like, you know, covers it as far as like that fight between Dillon White and Jermaine Franklin. Like I said, Dillon White could potentially face Anthony Joshua, but I don't think it's going to be next. Could be that rematch could be in the summer of next year, while Jermaine Franklin looks like he could have a number of options given his performance against Dillon White, and that, you know, some people may have felt like, you know, he could have got the upper hand, or at least the very least a draw, like some people are saying, you know what I mean? So, you know, with that being said, going to move into the other main event that happened over in California for the vacant WBC super lightweight title. That WBC title had been vacated by Josh Taylor, who, you know, became the undisputed champ at 140. But, you know, mandatories after mandatories, this and that. Jack Catterall had his fight with Jack Catterall, where I felt like Jack Catterall cooked him, but they gave the decision to Josh Taylor. They're going to have a rematch. It looks like, what is it, scheduled for February 4th or something like that, February 2nd, February 4th, I don't know. But they will have their rematch. So with the WBC title being vacant, originally could have been Jose Zepeda versus Jose Carlos Ramirez. Ramirez wasn't available for that, so they had to get the next guy that was available, and that was Regis Prograis. And so you have Cepeda versus Prograis there. And, you know, it was something that I was looking forward to, been talking about it for the past few weeks, that it would have been a very good fight, you know, with, you know, former world champion there in Regis Prograis. Coming in there with a record of 27 wins and only that lone loss by majority decision to Josh Taylor back in 2019. Jose Zepeda had a record of 36 wins and two losses where, you know, he came short against Jose Carlos Ramirez a while back in the super lightweight division. And then when he was at lightweight, you know, had fought for the WBO belt, but got stopped in a couple rounds to Terry Fleming. So guy has been, you know, having a string of wins, you know, up until this point. Of course, he had that fight of the year of sorts in 2020 against Ivan Baranchuk, where, you know, both of those guys got knocked down. And then Baranchuk just got straight folded, you know, to end that fight. But, you know, Zepeda had, you know, had those string of wins up to this point to, you know, get to that top spot there in the WBC rankings. And now he was stepping in the ring there against, you know, Regis Prograis over in Dignity Health Sports Park, you know, which is, you know, probably one of, or if not, you know, I would say top five venues for a fight without question. You know, I went there, you know, for Charlo Castaño 2. And that atmosphere is just great. Great setting, you know, great layout. Not really a bad seat out there. Or you could go at the top area where you could walk in and you pretty much get like a good view of, you know, the ring there. So definitely a good venue there for, you know, fights. But, you know, what you got here with Zepeda and Prograis, the thing about it is like, man, Regis Prograis looked like he was a whole different level of fighter in comparison to Jose Zepeda. And that Zepeda looked like he was just waiting to see what Prograis was doing, and that, you know, Prograis was a faster guy. He was a much sharper guy. And he eventually just broke down Jose Zepeda. And that Zepeda just didn't kind of like go to a plan B or C or whatever it was. And Prograis was just comfortable doing his thing. You know, he probably like fought his best fight. He was just throwing jabs, moving around, moving his head, moving his body, throwing a jab, not really, you know, having any type of rhythm. So he was throwing off Jose Zepeda every single time. Zepeda was just looking for a counter or doing something, but he just couldn't really just predict when that jab was coming through. And so Prograis was just starting off with that jab, working a little more shots over that, and just really kind of like broke down Jose Zepeda in this one, me, you know, and that over the course of the fight, I just felt like, hey man, if Regis Prograis just stepped it up a notch, then he could get him out of that. But Prograis, you know, in the 11th round, scored a couple of big shots, through. Jose Zepeda back, you know, a little bit, was able to score a knockdown, but the referee had stepped in and stopped the bout. Me on the rail, I felt like, you know, Zepeda could have gotten up. I didn't really think that he was seriously hurt, but it was just the way that Regis Prograis was just dominating the fight that I guess the referee just didn't feel like Zepeda couldn't do much, you know, if he got up, whatever it is. So ended up making that a TKO victory for Regis Prograis, and he is able to acquire that WBC super lightweight title, you know? Like Android was saying here, man, you know, Prograis showed his class, you know, and that he's a, you know, very talented fighter, you know, and that he says that he wishes more people, you know, got to see he deserves to be on a bigger platform. Would have been perfect for ESPN. Well, I mean, you know, people kind of like seeing, you know, what he's done in, you know, recent times, you know, being under multiple promotional platforms, and that has kind of gotten him in some precarious positions. So he could have had a shot to be, I guess, under, you know, the Premier Boxing Champions banner with multiple promoters that work with Premier Boxing Champions. But that didn't, you know, end up being the case. But, you know, now he's able to, you know, kind of like be in a position to maybe get on ESPN with this win and being the WBC champion. You know, he could potentially get one fight that he has been looking for a long time, and that is against Jose Carlos Ramirez. Now, remember, when you had that World Boxing Super Series there at Super Lightweight, Regis Prograis was, you know, really set on being a part of that World Boxing Super Series, but he also thought that Jose Carlos Ramirez would also be included in that. But Ramirez was not, and he didn't quite, you know, go on there. So, can Regis Prograis go in there, get to the finals of that World Boxing Super Series against Josh Taylor in a very close bout that some people felt like Regis Prograis won. But it ended up being Josh Taylor as the victor. But now, fast forward to now, you have Regis Prograis as WBC champion. He won a vacant belt, WBC, usually with the WBC rules. If you win a vacant title, you have to face two consecutive mandatory challengers. Yep, two consecutive mandatory challengers. And so with that being said, those, if y'all check the rankings in the WBC, you do have Jose Carlos Ramirez there, as he wasn't available to fight for the vacant belt. So that's number one. And the next person that would be in line could be the winner of Teofimo Lopez versus Sandor Martin, which we'll kind of like get into in the next episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. But, you know, for Regis Prograis to have that performance and to get this win, that was very big of him. We're going to have one guest here to kind of like chop it up with us that's been part of the Boxing Source Radio Show a few times here, and that's Steph. Here that's in the building. Steph, if I'm not mistaken, were you out there in Carson, California?
Yes, sir, I was. Hello, Boxing Source. Thanks for having me, man.
Yo, all good, man, all good.
Yeah, man, I was, yeah. Again, you know, I live out here. I work and live out here in Southern California, so it was just right up the street. And, man, we had a blast, man. It was, you know, hats off to everybody. Hats off to Regis, both fighters, the main event, Marv Nation. It was a fun time. It was a fun time, fun crowd, good crowd, good energy.
Oh, yeah, You know, like I said about that Dignity Health Sports Park, it's one of the best venues out there for boxing, man.
Right, right. I saw a tweet earlier that I kind of tweeted back out. Man, I really hope the Charlo Tim Zoo fights right back at the same venue, man. I know it probably won't, but that's what I'm wishfully thinking. I hope so. That'd be great. I think people would turn out for that.
Oh, yeah, they would. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I understand Vegas. I get that.
Yep.
I get that.
Now, what did you think about Prograis' performance there watching it live?
Strong, good finisher, but solid performance. He was very strong, you know, down the stretch, right? Both guys were, but, you know, it seemed that that's the first word that comes to mind, strong.
Oh, strong.
One more time.
No, I was saying, yeah, that was a very, very strong, solid performance there by ProGrace in this bout.
Thank goodness when I was there, you know, I wasn't scoring it. I was just being a fan, dude. But I wish he would have kept his jab up. Probably two rounds in, I had told the people whom I was with, I was like, man, I wonder if he's going to be able to keep that awkward fainting up for, 12 rounds. You know, he got to be dead tired. But his endurance seemed pretty well, you know. He took, I think it was the eighth, probably the ninth round off. He took a round off to catch his wind. And then he when I say he got lucky, he just he hit Zepeda with some things that he didn't respond to. And then he was able to swarm him at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I had him originally stopping like 10, but that was the 11th, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. But great fight, man. Zepeda's a tough warrior too, man. He just I think it was the fainting that really took him off his guard for a little bit, because usually he'd be fishes and swims for blood a little quicker than he usually does, but Regis was so hard to hit. Mm-hmm. Regis did a good job, man, and he took it. He's a tough guy too, man. He took some stuff on the chin really well, right? But there were a few flushes that he got hit with about, 5-6 times. And Regis, didn't blink, kept moving. It looked like he got angry, in fact. But I enjoyed the fight, man. I really did. And I'm happy for Regis. I see the timelines and kind of the news waves. They're just, they're blown up with hypothetical matchups. And, that's good, right? Because that's what we do. We just speculate. We go off the current data, then we just start speculating. Some know more than others, but it's fun to just speculate, right?
Well, I mean, I kind of like said the, how things are done with the WBC usually when there is a fight for a vacant belt and the winner of that vacant title faces two mandatory challengers back to back. And so with that being said, you had, a fighter that, could have fought for the vacant belt at this time against Jose Zepeda in Jose Carlos Ramirez that would be there. And the WBC had also, ordered an eliminator of sorts when you have Teofimo Lopez and Sandor Martin, who are scheduled to fight December 10th in Madison Square Garden. So
real quick, what route is Teo going then?
That would kind of like depend on what he does against Sandor Martin. You could potentially have him, be next in line, or if Ramirez is not available, he could be next in line for that world title shot against Regis ProGrace. But there also has been some talk that he could be a potential opponent for Devin Haney if Devin Haney moves up to 140 after his projected fight against Vasyl Lomachenko.
Right. I agree. Those are two really good fights. But thinking about Regis first and coming off his win, man, that's a bad style. If Teo decides to go with Regis, man, he's prime style for Regis. Someone who would just sit there, who doesn't have good defense and can't fight off the back foot as easily. And, I get frustrated time from time with Regis, admiring his work a lot, where he has that overhand and he pulls it back, or he even does that with his jab sometimes, to kind of showboat a wee bit. But he's not, Tio would, I'm not saying Tio would bring it to him, but like Regis would love that fight, man. Regis would tear him up.
Yeah,
due respect to Tio.
I think he would love both of those fights, the fight against Ramirez and the fight against Tio, because, both of those guys right in front of him. And the thing with Ramirez is Ramirez would be a much slower fighter than Teo. So he would be, licking his fingers, be like barbecue chicken, when it comes to a potential fight between him and Jose Carlos Ramirez. But, this kind of like, establishes Regis ProGrace as, one of those top guys there in the 140-pound division,
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see, what else happens. Like I said, you have one upcoming bout here at 140, with Teofimo Lopez and Sandor Martin. Next year in February, you have, you know, Josh Taylor defending the WBO title there against Jack Catterall in a rematch. We're still waiting to see what happens with the IBF title. You know, I guess they can't really, you know, organize that fight to take place. And so
where did that belt end up? Actually, real fast, I want to back up. Why did Carlos Ramirez, why did he fall out of the fight originally? Because wasn't he originally called?
He was originally called. They talk about, you know, marriage, honeymoon type of thing going down with Jose Carlos Ramirez. So he said that he wasn't going to quite be ready for this fight at this time period. So that's why, you know, he wasn't, you know, there for the fight against Jose Tapeda. So there's that. And the thing with the IBF, it was like Jeremiah Ponce versus Subiru Matias. They've been trying to make that fight, but Ponce, you know, may have, you know, visa issues or some real visa issues that has prevented that fight from taking place. So much to the point where it could be Subiru Matias versus Sozahan Ergashev for that vacant IBF belt there at 140. But, you know, it remains to be seen how that goes there. You know what I mean?
And Matias, he's aligned with PBC, right?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Excuse me.
Oh, yeah, you know, I got caught there a little bit. Yeah, so you see, that is basically the scene there at the 140-pound division, you know, real quick. Right.
Yeah, so, my bad. I was coughing there. Okay, then I want to back up one more time. Look, Jay, I'm high on Carlos Ramirez, man. I don't care what none of y'all say. There is, I mean, I had questions, I think, the first time I saw him, but seeing him how he, you know, was a champion, have had close fights, win, lose, or draw, and come back to that close fight him, he, you know, some say he should have drawn, some say he should have lost. He won, man, you know, but by the standards. And maybe he should have maybe lost one of those, but he still has been a good champion. Then he unifies. And then, you know, he goes right after smoke again with Josh Taylor. And what seemed like he was making a good second half run up until he got the knockdown twice on him. And then that kind of took the wind out of him. That was good for him, you know. That was good. That's normal behavior for boxing and boxers. So, but as far as his style goes, you know, with the current top guys, it mixes very well, man. I think it mixes very, very well. You could say he's got chinny, but like, who is it, man? If he's fighting the best guys, but his style is good. I got some questions as we kind of progress through this 40 conversation, but I'm still high very much on Carlos Ramirez, man. I like him, and plus, you know, he's got a good relationship with Bobby. And of course, the WBC, this could be his last leg before, you know, what is he, 32, my age, 32, something like that? Maybe 31. But he is his last leg as far as becoming a legitimate world champion. So, he, you know, these 40 guys, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Go ahead.
Real quick, Regis Prograis is the oldest of the group at 33. Ramirez is at 30.
Oh, okay. So he's... he's still physically prime strong. Okay. That's good to know for me. Okay, let me rephrase that. Not his last shot, but like, that's where I want to go. Like, these 40 guys, like, take Regis. I always say this. Like, people always kind of point at the fact that he's missed weight a couple times or struggled. Look, like, he's smart, man. He's a I saw him live, man. Regis is he's big, man. He's a big 5'8" guy. He's a big, like, you know, just a man. And he's smart, man. He knows that there are killers at 47 and bigger guys who are cutting down and, you know, equally or better, you know, a threat. So that's why guys like him and Carlos and even Josh Taylor at this point stay at 40, because it's just they're looking for advantages. That's how I kind of view that. So and for all the talk we heard in the last, 15 months about Josh Taylor moving up, you know, he can't make the weight and money issues and blah, blah, blah. You're still at 40, bro. You're still at 40, dog. So I never make it, and I always say this, like, I never make a big issue of the weight. Like, these guys, everyone's cutting. Just make the weight. Obviously, for health reasons, if you got to do your thing, yeah. You know, no one's pressuring you to do anything. But if that's what you chose, do it. That's your professionalism. So I think that's interesting. And what do you know? Albeit they're all welterweights, the guys who are moving up, like Tio and Dev and so forth. And guys who are already there, Tiger, Abdullah, like, what the heck? Mix it up. Mix it up. Mix it up.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and, you know, think about it is with, you know, Prograis says, you know, Hardcore Boxing News says he has a nutritionist. So, I mean, he did make the decision that he wants to just, you know, establish his career at 140 pounds. And, you know, given that, you're going to see him have those fights that he's going to try to look for at 140 pounds, whether it's, you know, a fight against Jose Carlos Ramirez, maybe a rematch against Josh Taylor down the line, that, you know, those could be the options out there for Regis Prograis. And I think with him, he's going to really pay attention to Taylor's fight against Jack Catterall in February, because, you know, if he, you know, does have the thing where he does have to face those two mandatory challengers, that would kind of like hang up his schedule for a little bit. But outside of that, I feel like he could really make a real statement in 2023 with fights that he could have potentially against Ramirez and or Josh Taylor, or even Teofimo Lopez if he does get past Sandor Martin and on December 10th. So,
yeah, we gonna get T.O. knocked out, dog. We gonna get him knocked out, dog. Like, this, every time we talk about this guy, we mention him with some smoke. And he can't beat those guys. He can't beat those guys, dog. Not the top guys. Not the top guys. And think about it. It's a boxing match. One boxing match.
I'll talk about Teofimo Lopez at a later time, but, you know, there's been one thing that's kind of like been pointed out about Teofimo Lopez in reference to who's in his corner. And,
I like that. That's interesting.
A little bit of an issue of sorts there for him.
Let me say this real fast, Jay, too. You know, I found, you know, being at the boxing event last night, I found something very, I say unique, but it's probably not unique sounding. But what's interesting, man, as I watched the rounds progress into the later rounds, dude, these guys do not have a lot of time. They don't have any time. They don't have no time. And this is, I always say this, this is such a brutal way to make your money. And, gosh, man, like, it's fun and great, but, like, dang, man, these guys don't have a lot of time, dog. I witnessed someone, like, getting beat down and getting old right before me, all right before me. It was crazy. And celebrating everything. That's crazy. Yeah. So, you know, there's some smoke. There's some smoke. So what I'm trying to say is that I appreciate guys like Big Fish and spirits like that who are really trying to be great, man, and such a – whatever era you want to call this, you got to commend guys who want to be great, man.
Yeah,
they all want to, but like you can definitely see the ones who are trying to stick out.
Yep, no doubt. Now, of course, they had a few results out there over in Dignity Health Sports Park, including Charles Conwell, you know, getting in there in the super welterweight division, now still undefeated. Had a majority decision win over Juan Carlos Abreu there at super welterweight. Bakadir Jalilov got a KO victory over Curtis Harper to stay unbeaten. You had Nathan Rodriguez score a win. Fernando Vargas Jr. score a knockout win. Amado Vargas also with a unanimous decision win in there as well. So you had a good number of fights that were included in that card. Promoted by Marv Nation there that was on Fight TV or broadcast by Fight TV Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson, California. But want to move forward into a game show of sorts, as we had a sweepstakes that took place over at the O2 Arena in Greenwich, as you had Zachary Parker facing John Ryder in the super middleweight division. That was for the WBO Interim Super Middleweight Championship. And yeah, this is the same Zach Parker that could have faced Demetrius Andrade, but initially when they had that purse bid, Demetrius Andrade could not make that fight as scheduled as he was injured. Then he had been recovered, and they had another purse bid that ended up being won by Queensbury Promotions for a much lesser price than the initial price that they had for the first purse bid. That is why Demetrius Andrade was not put in position for this. And so you have a John Ryder in there against Zach Parker. And, well, Zach Parker, you know, gave it a go for four rounds, but injured his right hand to the point where he felt like he couldn't continue in the fifth round. So they had called the bout. It now is going to be John Ryder as the interim WBO super middleweight champion. This is a guy that has a win over Daniel Jacobs by, what was that, split decision early this year. That was like a while back, man. I remember that joint. And I was like, you know, Daniel Jacobs was Daniel Jacobs, and he could have, you know, you would have thought from an ability standpoint that Daniel Jacobs could have got the better of, you know, John Ryder, but he didn't. And so it ended up being a decision win for John Ryder. And so now he's able to get himself in position to face Santos Saul Alvarez Barragan. And for those that have kind of like followed the podcast a while back, I've said for a while that originally when you had the schedule for, yes, Canelo Alvarez, that he was facing Dmitry Bivol, he was facing Gennady Golovkin. And after that fight with Gennady Golovkin, that he could potentially be facing John Ryder. But with him suffering an injury in that particular bout, he couldn't really fight, you know, this year. So that is how John Ryder, he kind of like got himself in this bout here with Zach Parker. He gets the win. He is the interim champion. And it's likely that he will end up facing Canelo Alvarez in May of next year. And that the whole thing with Canelo and Dmitry Bivol could be pushed back until next September. But for John Ryder, man, it looks like he done won the sweepstakes. He, you know how those folks in the Price is Right, when they get that new car, or you know when you got that pressure luck, and they talking about big bucks, big bucks, big bucks, and stop, and they hit the big bucks, and they got the $5,000 with a free spin. That is John Ryder right now. You know what I mean? I feel like that was just something where, you know, people are kind of disappointed in the sense that John Ryder is able to get himself in this position where you had Demetrius Andrade, who tried to make the moves to become a WBO interim champ. Like I said, he suffered that injury and then wouldn't take that short money to face Zach Parker. And so now it's going to be John Ryder that's going to be facing Canelo Alvarez. But some people may also think that even if Demetrius Andrade fought Zach Parker and won, that Canelo Alvarez probably still wouldn't have been facing him. So there's also that. I heard the disappointment in your voice there, Steph.
Yeah, for so many reasons too. Like it's okay for, yeah. Let me start off this way. It's really easy to bash Andre, but I like how you ended it while you introduced me, how like some still think had he won that, he still wouldn't have got a shot. I think that's possible just for the reasons of the reasons. And then there's, you know, how wacky whirly, durly the WBO is, because they call, well, since Canelo is a super champ, it's an 18-month layoff between Mandos. So he's still choosing whomever. But let's fast forward the rider. Like, so this is who he's fighting. Dog. Like, I'm... There's nothing to say, Jay. Like, how could we ever be impressed? I, this is to all the Canelo fans out there. You see, I'm more of a Canelo fan than y'all. I want to see him face the smoke, not run from it. And, like, now, like, and I get to say this now. Who is John Ryder? Who has he fought? Who is he? Zach Parker, who quit? Who, like, magically, mysteriously quit? Like, man, all right, here we go. Here we go. Like, we got to listen to this. And on that note, real fast, I just have to sneak this in there. Man, I saw Jamal Charlo in person, like 5 feet away from the dude, 10 feet away from the guy.
Yep.
Bro.
Yep. Bro,
he's an NFL safety. He's like, I know how they always add a half inch, you know, in sports. So he's probably 6'2.5". Maybe 6'3", pushing 6'3", all 200 pounds, bro. Like, this dude is, he's got long legs, short torso with like a big upper body. He looks like an NFL safety, G, or like a big cornerback.
Hey, look, like, I know you're talking about the thing there with Mal Charlo, but I'm not surprised. I'm like, I've seen pictures of Mal Charlo a couple years back, him and Jamel Charlo standing next to Andre Ward, who was fighting at 175, and they look every bit as bigger than Andre Ward. Okay.
Yeah. So, and David Morrell is bigger than that. David Benavidez are bigger than that. Like, they're bigger than that. Like, real fast. Yeah. Like, so you see, like, when I took that little jab at the Canelo fan, see, I'm a real Canelo fan. I know he looks at that and says, oh, damn, those were threats. I'm good. That's why, because, like, you got to listen to how his camp talks, how he talks. Like, dude, he just, man, he don't want to fight those guys. But I'm supposed to be impressed because John Ryder is a WBO interim champion. Mm-hmm. And this guy's good. I'm like, man, come on, man.
Okay. Look at this here with Canelo Alvarez, right? We're going to go on the thing with Canelo Alvarez.
Also, he's clout chasing Bivol.
All right.
Now, what do you know?
Like, but here's the thing, right? You got 2018. I'm going to go September 2018 up until now. Gennady Golovkin, Rocky Fielding, Daniel Jacobs, Sergey Kovalev, Callum Smith, Abney Yildirim, Billy Joe Saunders, Caleb Plant, Dmitry Bivol, Gennady Golovkin, and then it could likely be John Ryder. I'm seeing a pattern of sorts. Right? So,
yeah, man.
You could have John Ryder, and yes, like I said, he's faced Daniel Jacobs and got a split decision win over Daniel Jacobs. He fought Callum Smith, where a number of people felt like he gave Callum Smith all he could handle. But outside of that, yeah, there's really not much to really talk about. He's had a loss by split decision to Rocky Fielding 5 years ago, among other losses.
Wait. John Ryder lost to Rocky?
Rocky Fielding, and he lost to a man by the name of Jack Arnfield, who really couldn't get past being a international champion in the middleweight division. So, yeah, that is John Ryder for y'all. And he could potentially face Canelo Alvarez, you know?
Wow. No, he's going to be chosen is what it is. He's chosen.
It's similar to when Canelo Alvarez was facing.
But it works out. I'm sorry to cut you. It works out because, you know, he announced early. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go have hand surgery. So he chose this guy to come back for a tune-up, you know, something like along those lines. So, like, this is – meanwhile, Mal showed up – I'm sorry, I got to say this. He showed up talking to Bivol. They got it all on the telly. Like, man, this is – something's off here.
Yeah, but I mean, he ain't facing no bivalent in this case. I got Frank Bay in the building. What's going on?
What's up, Boxing Source?
Yo,
what up, Frank?
John Ryder winning the sweepstakes last night. You know, Zach Parker after four rounds said, "Oh, my hand is hurt, man. I can't fight. My hand is hurt. Can't do it." I'm like, and it's like some people have said, right? Like, if you know that you could potentially fight Santos Saul Alvarez Barragán, man, you're going to find a way to get through that whole fight and see if you could still find a way to get a win. But I guess he said it was just too bad. It is what it is. So, Frank, I'm not sure if you caught anything with that or highlights of that, but also – you know, we talked about White versus Franklin before you got on, and also Regis Prograis getting a TKO win over Jose Zepeda. So what do you think about the weekend's action?
Yeah, I thought it was it ended pretty well. I think the middle of the day fights were pretty mid with the White and Franklin and Parker, the anticlimactic Parker and Ryder. But it ended well with the Rougarou and Zepeda. So, and it's just strong. You know, Rougarou made a statement. That was the fight of the night. The other ones, the guys just put themselves in line for big money shots, you know.
Yeah.
That's the thing with boxing is that, you know, that's really what it's about is, you know, putting yourself in line for these big names. So White goes to AJ potentially and Ryder gets the Canelo match. And then Rougarou sets up maybe a rematch with Taylor.
Hopefully that happens. You know, I said that, you know, with him winning a vacant belt, he would likely face two mandatories back to back. But, you know, I would like to see a rematch between Prograis and Josh Taylor there. You know what I mean?
So, but you know what? Like, Josh don't even talk like that, though. Like, Rougarou was always, you know, since that loss has always talked about a rematch. Josh is... Mm-hmm. Not at all even mentioned it. I just want to flag that. I just want to point that out.
Gotcha.
Not all saying right. He's scared of anything like that, but just like any of the rematches, you know, because, you know, I'm not trying to speak for the guy, but perhaps he's feels like he's already beat the best, so he's looking for other type of challenges within the division. But like you guys, I hope we get that fight too.
Word. Adding in another person in here with the Jim Lewis – avatar.
Yeah, bro. Man. Listen. All I gotta say is that, you know, the Regis fight he's got the WBA now. He's got the WBC now. He's obviously a two-weight champion at the moment. He's ain't got the WBA now, but he's won that before. The Josh Taylor majority decision fight, in my opinion, was a draw. I thought that was a draw. What's next for Regis? Like, we've had the Ramirez guy who's been calling him out. We've had a few bits and pieces with Teofimo going off as well at the moment. I just think he needs to just enjoy this win, to be fair. Just let him enjoy the win. That was a hard fight. He got pieced up in the fight as well, if you looked at his face. Zepeda was no joke.
Right.
I just think let Regis take the werewolf belt back to WBC, back to Louisiana, and let him just have a bit of enjoyment with the belt. You know? That's all.
Yeah, word.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know like when Prograis's next fight would kind of like be scheduled for.
They're trying to do a two-fight deal now. So they're trying to get Tio on the back burner next fight. Mm-hmm. And then they're trying to rinse out another defense after that. They're trying to get Teofimo for his next fight.
Yeah.
That's what what's his name? Rafael, whatever his name is. His manager's trying to get him that next fight against Teofimo. And I think senior might actually take that fight as well. So we're going to have to see. Listen, Tio's a crazy bro. Who knows what's going on with Teofimo, bro? This guy's insane. Who's listening to? He's just off his head, bro. I thought Angel Garcia was bad, but this guy's insane.
Well, you thought Adrian Broner was bad?
Nah, Adrian Broner is Einstein compared to TLC. Wow. Adrian Broner would probably take you to the moon and back compared to TLC Senior, bro. That guy's
Broner never got unified. He didn't get undisputed. Yeah. So he beat a and Tio at least beat a guy pound for pound, which Broner never did.
No Tio hate. I'm not giving him no hate. I'm not giving him no hate. I'm just you got to admit though, it is funny, bro. It is.
Yeah, he goes a little extreme, but it's not criminal. You know, some of these guys got court cases, so let's just be reminded what it really is. It's just boxing. Yeah, versus some of these guys are in some serious deep water, so I think you would call them more of a head case than Tio.
Yeah, I understand. I look at it from the comedy point of view, though, bro. And he turned up at the Canelo conference, and I hate Canelo. I don't like Canelo, but he turns up at the Canelo conference with all his belts. He's got him strapped over himself.
Oh, yeah. So like, well, when Canelo was when the
that was messed up.
Yeah, but he's still the money man. He and despite all that, he's still the money man in the division. 140. He's the money man.
Yeah.
He's selling out the Garden.
He's not quite selling out the Garden yet. I recently checked out the Ticketmaster things. You know, they're trying to work on that. So within the next week or so, we'll see if it gets a little bit closer to being a sellout there. But
yeah, I'm just saying the numbers. He does on TV. He does the same as an undisputed person. So you know, there's that part.
So there's that. Yeah,
He's a great fighter.
Yeah,
I'm gonna lie, bro. It's gonna
be like I said, that 140 division there is gonna be very interesting coming into 2023. And, you know, 140 over the past few years, 140 over the past few years has had some very, very good matchups. So, definitely looking forward to that. Going into what's happening next weekend, it's supposed to have, a couple of bouts out here. One bout that, you know, not necessarily is getting talked that much and not really getting that much pub is Chocolatito Gonzalez versus Juan Francisco Estrada version 3. And
amazing fight.
I think
that is going to be
a very, very good fight. But there's a number of people that are favoring Chocolatito in this one. They did feel like in what was that, March 13th, 2020, around that range, or no, 2021, my bad, 2021, where they did feel like Gonzalez won that fight, but it ended up being a decision for Juan Francisco Estrada. So this particular rematch here, definitely looking forward to that. And seeing what would kind of like be the outcome for this, as you know, Chocolatito has been you know, shown as one of the better pound for pound fighters in the sport over the past decade or so. So definitely looking forward to that. And then you also have the Queensbury card, headlined by Tyson Fury going up against Derek Chisora, and you'll also have Daniel Dubois facing Kevin Lorena for that WBA regular title at heavyweight. So you'll have, like I said, Tyson Luke Fury going up against Chisora for a third time. Man, looks like it's somewhere that could be like a cash out of sorts or whatever it is. But, you know, Fury gets through this bout fairly easily, then he could be, you know, right in there to go ahead and face Oleksandr Usyk. And like I said earlier, I'm not sure that fight is going to be for undisputed, but if that remains to be seen, you know. So that kind of like is shaping up to be what is going down on December 3rd. As like I said, you have Fury versus Chisora, and also Juan Francisco Estrada versus Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez there in that. So that is the schedule, you know, coming up for December 3rd, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Fear is just helping out a friend with Cesaro, and I hear that for sure. Undisputed's next. You know, Fear's team is really talking for real, for real. And, of course, you know, Alexander's always talked about that. So I believe that's next. But I really – and then secondly, I would say from what I've seen on paper at least, putting two and two together, they're really trying to set up Wilder and Fury again if he gets through with Alexander. And then thirdly, I would say – and thirdly, I would say, like, and then also when I look at the paperwork and put two and two together, eventually, you know, because there's so many standoffs and holdoffs that these belts are going to be broken up soon, meaning what Alexander's doing. There's some guys who are really set up. I mean, Queensberry's kind of in a little shuffle there because they got guys who could fight each other now. So – we shall see, man. 23 is going to be on fire. It's going to be on fire.
Well, the thing with Queensbury is they got two guys that are basically in the driver's seat to be, you know, next in line to try to go after one of those belts that Oleksandr Usyk has, WBO with Joe Joyce, WBA with Daniel Dubois. And, you know, I did mention earlier about the IBF, you know, with Filip Hrgović, and that, you know, they had exercised that IBF mandatory and said, hey, you're going to have to do something, or else we're going to try to go for a purse bid on that belt.
That guy's food.
Yeah. So the thing about it is that, you know what? I'm like, if they go ahead and do that, yo, Oleksandr Usyk's going to say, all right, you want to have that WF belt? Go ahead and have that. I'm going after Tyson Luke Fury because that would be for the number one spot in the heavyweight division, and that will be that. I'm going for a legacy there. You know what I'm saying? So – that is going to be the aim of Oleksandr Usyk. And, you know, for them to do that means that Oleksandr Usyk just wouldn't be a two-division undisputed world champion, but he would be able to go up in Tyson Fury to say, hey, I want to say that I have been the best in the cruiserweight and the heavyweight divisions. And for him to do that, boy, you know.
That is word, bro.
100%. Yeah, he'd be an all-time great.
Yep, all-time great. That's right. All-time great, and you know, as of right now, Oleksandr Usyk is rated number one in the Boxing Source pound-for-pound rankings, and, you know, I pretty much have him up there, and we'll see what happens next year. He goes ahead and faces Tyson Luke Fury, man, and I'm definitely looking forward to that particular bout, man, you know, in 2023.
Yeah, man, yeah. I want Usyk to win that. I'm from the UK, but I want Usyk to win that fight, bro. I'm sick of Fury's antics and everything that he's doing. I'm sick of it, bro. I'm sick of it, man. I can't even. It's just too much. Like,
I never understood the Fury hate. What's the Fury hate? If he gives you an undisputed fight, what's the hate for?
Maybe it depends, bro. We'll see.
I mean, he gave you great fights. Did you like the Wilder fights? Did you like the Wilder fights?
I was pro Fury in the Wilder fights because obviously Wilder, like, as true boxing fan, we all know Wilder was a joke from 2015, the Stavern shit, and then all these stupid defenses against Ortiz. We all know that, but I'm just getting a bit sick of Fury, man.
Yeah, that same joke put your boy on his back five times.
Yeah.
So he's got to be good at something.
I'm not a Wilder fan.
It's all right. I'm just saying.
No, I understand the hate. I do, and I don't.
I'm from the UK.
Yeah,
not a Wilder fan. That's cool.
Going by what Frank is saying, there are a number of people within the UK that aren't necessarily fans of Tyson Fury, and that's been that way for a good while now. It's been for years.
It's not really that so much. It's the fact that, like, I like Fury the most out of the UK boxers. So, like, Dillian White, AJ, these are complete clowns who held the heavyweight division for ransom. It's not that I hate Fury. I like him more than all of the other heavyweights, apart from Alexander Usyk. But I just can't be doing with his antics, man. Don't you find it bizarre, man? It's too much now. Just fight people. Why is he giving this Chisora guy a, like, 17th fight? Come on, bro. Come on, man.
He's just helping out a friend. He's just helping out a friend. But, I mean, I hear you, T-Game. Like, you don't like his – I mean, I don't either. I think he's a clown outside the rings. But on the inside of the ring, he's a killer. And I got him over Alexander in a fucking nail biter. Like, edge of your seat. Edge of your seat type fight. I'm a heavyweight boxing fan. That's my favorite boxing. And believe me, there's boxing's terrific everywhere else, too. But there's nothing like the heavyweights, man. So – looking forward to that fight.
Most people who know boxing, we all sort of come together, like, in terms of the real people that know boxing. It's like, obviously, us four know boxing. But then you get all the fanboys and all this, like, fanboyism, and I'm sick of that, bro. I'm sick of all that shit, man. And all these so-called I'm not doing that anymore. I was on all these Mexican panels, like, Canelo's gonna knock out Bivol in 5 rounds. Get the fuck out of here, bruh. Knocking Bivol in fucking.
I have a problem with this. When it's okay to be like that, but if he fights for Undisputed and gets do you take it back, or do you still think he's a clown?
Nah, the Zerdo shit when they were saying, "Oh, Zerdo's gonna do it." Come on, bruh. Zerdo ain't doing shit.
Sometimes, you know, sometimes it could be, you know, fans from different areas, they'll, you know, say some things that, you know, seem off the wall. That's
crazy, bro. It's crazy.
Yeah, but that's part of boxing. Hey, I hear it all the time, and I'm sure each one of y'all have heard it too. So, you know, there's definitely that. But, you know, like I said, we'll see what happens there on December 3rd with all of those fights that are taking place, you know, over in the UK and then, you know, also in, I think it's Phoenix, Arizona, I think it is for fight.
Yeah. Arizona card, bro.
You know, Glendale, yeah. So, but outside of that, I ain't really see nothing else as far as like any other undercard belt. Gonzalez, so I might have to do some research on that too.
Boxing Source, is there anything before Christmas? Is there any big fights before after the chocolate?
Well, you have that's December. That's December 3rd. December 10th is Teofimo Lopez versus Sandor Martin.
Wow.
Terrence Crawford versus David Avancian, and you will have Warrington versus Luis Alberto Lopez. That's December 10th. December 13th is Inoue versus Butler for the Undisputed Bantamweight
Championship. That's before the new year.
And the other thing that's left on Showtime is Michelle Rivera versus Frank Martin. So that is the schedule for the rest of.
Yeah, can't wait for that. I think I'm going to turn up for that one. I think I may make it. I got to check with the crew again. I think we might pull up.
What is it? Vladimir Shishkin versus Jose Uscada Gui as part of that.
So we got a good December.
Ioka's at the end of the year too, I believe.
Oh really?
New Year's.
Yeah, New Year's.
Who's he fighting in the New Year's? Let me check, bro.
Bam's brother, right, Jamie?
Or Frank?
I can Google.
Yeah. And he fight Franco, right, Frank?
Oh.
Let me just Google it.
He's fighting Josh Franco, yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go.
You know how they do something that, you know, December. Well, it's December.
Yeah, Ioka did that last year. Remember Ioka Tanaka last year? I think that was the same fucking time, bro.
Yeah, but this has got to be.
That was a good fight.
They're the super flyweight division. It's going to be December 30th.
Oh, wow.
We're here. It'll be, you know, January 1st over there. But, you know, they usually have, you know, big events around, as they say over there, the first day of the year.
Is that in Japan? Is that in Japan, bro?
Yeah.
Why they always fight these big fights on New Year's Eve?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's just that's just been their kind of like their tradition of sorts over the past few years. You know, having those key fights there around that time, man. He's fought on there for the past. Damn, it's been the past shit. It's been not in Japan. He's actually had a fight on December 31st, 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021, and now this year.
I thought something was strange. I just remember it every new year. Oh my god, that's messed up.
Shout out to Android on here, and they say they do that because they get numbers out there, and it said Zulu Ioka gets 10 million views in the network over there in Japan. 10 million views for, you know, the that's some numbers upon numbers upon numbers right there.
Write that down, Dan Raphael.
So that's going to be another, you know, good event, a very good event there, man, because that is a unification belt. There versus with Kazuda Ioka and Josh Franco, man.
Is that a unification?
WBA and WBO.
Well? Oh man, Ioka just killing it.
So that's gonna be real, really good there, man. Those type of fights. That'd be the thing, though. You be like, I know you're over in the UK game, but over in the States, you have like those fights over there in Japan. Like you had, Naoya Inoue versus Nomito Donaire years back.
A lovely fight.
That was a great fight. But man, I had struggled to even try to get up in time for the beginning of that fight. But I was able to catch it, midway through the fight. And it still ended up being fight of the year material. You know what I mean? So... we'll see what happens there with Ioka and Franco. And yeah, they might have that on the zone for us here in the US. They will have it over there in Japan because Japan don't have it be carried by another network.
Yeah, I'll just pull it from a US stream, bro. I'm in the UK, I'll just pull it from a US stream, bro.
That finishes off. 2022 as far as like the boxing schedule goes. So we're gonna get a few solid fights here in 2022. Hopefully I will be able to cover that card in Madison Square Garden on December 10th. But if I do, that means I'll be out there during Heisman Trophy, that Heisman Trophy evening. So there's gonna be a good amount of traffic out there in New York City, for that from a sports standpoint.
Are you gonna go down to the to watch the fight?
The plan?
Well, I mean, I'm based not that far. Well, like 4 hours driving to.
You'd have to get into Penn Station, bro. You'd have to park up, and then you'd have to get into Pennsylvania Avenue. That's on the map.
Penn Station. What
I would suggest for you, get a hotel in the north of New York, then park your car up, and then get the underground tube and get off at Penn Station, then go back on the tube.
Well, given the prices for the tolls out there, usually what I do is I don't care. I will get on a bus and get out there and not pay them tolls, get over to Madison Square Garden and get a hotel pretty much in Manhattan, or if I have to go to
you don't want to be paying shit, man.
That's how I do it, So definitely looking forward to, another trip over to New York City if I make it out there to cover Teofimo Lopez there versus Sandor Martin. So that would be a pretty good thing there.
He still has to win that fight.
Out there,
that's a difficult fight.
Yeah,
that's a very like so, Sandor Martin's alive, dude, bro. That's a good fight. That's a good fight. That Fresno card. Now, that Fresno card.
Now I will be, you know, covering or trying to do a preview of that fight card. Also, we'll kind of talk a little bit about the thing with Terrence Crawford versus David Avanian. Also, that's going to take place in Omaha, Nebraska on December 10th. That will be on the next episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. But with that being said, this has been 1 hour, around 1 hour and 30 minutes on the live podcast here, you know, on this episode. So give thanks to Steph. Give thanks to Frank. Give thanks to T-Gang.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, taking part on this live telecast here. And like I said, we'll be right back at it next weekend, next Sunday, scheduled 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. And like I said, the end of every show, folks, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit. Not to stand and trade. On that note, folks, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Peace.